This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour with Pastor David M. Atkinson. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and request that you pray for this ministry. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Now here is Pastor Atkinson.
Let's turn, please, to 1 Kings chapter 22. 1 Kings chapter 22. This will be a heavy message. It's heavy for me to preach it. I want you to understand, as I preach the message, I have the faces of two friends before my mind. I have the faces of two friends. One I began to minister with when we were both about 17 years of age. We started ministry to youth and just did it as an independent youth ministry, and then went off to Bible college together and spent 4 years together in Bible college. He became the pastor. He was handpicked by his predecessor. That's fine. He became handpicked to pastor one of Canada's largest Baptist churches, and he had me to preach there in that place often. And he's out of the ministry today because of the things that we'll be discussing in this message. The other friend who's faces before my mind as I preach this message is prematurely in eternity. Now, I choose my words deliberately. I am not a Calvinist. Men choose. And men make choices as consequences of sin or not being right with God in some way. And so my second friend, who used to call me an influence on his life, now I have to wonder, what kind of influence was I on his life? Because he chose to go prematurely to eternity. And so that is the backdrop against which I preach. 1 Kings 22, 29. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth of Gilead. And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and enter into the battle, but put thou on thy robes. And the king of Israel disguised himself and went into the battle, but the enemy, the opponent, the king of Syria, commanded his 32 captains that had rule over his chariot, saying, fight neither with small nor great, save only with the king of Israel. Our text in the previous message and in this message is verse 31c. Fight only with the king. Fight only with the king. In the previous message, I said I'm not advocating Baptist popes or Baptist kings. I'm simply using the phrase the king as a word picture or metaphor for the leader. A king is any leader in any field of endeavor. A father, a single mother, a politician, a deacon, a businessman or businesswoman. A king could be the pastor of a local church, a Bible college president or dean, or an evangelist. A king is a person of influence. A king is someone whose rise or fall impacts a good number of people, for good or for ill. The title of these messages is How to Get the King. How to Get the King. And we saw that the verb to get can mean to capture, injure, destroy, or kill. I implied that Satan's design is to destroy many lives by destroying one life, the life of the king or the leader. I referenced the game of chess and said that the game is lost when the king is in checkmate. We also observed that chess is a deliberate, premeditated mind game, and that luck or chance has nothing to do with the outcome. Satan has strategies against leaders. He deliberately lays nets for leaders. In chess, things take place by plan and by design. And when Satan gets the king, a leader, it's by plan and design. And we need to learn to see the designs and to anticipate in advance Satan's plan to get the king. And so we started to look at ways in which Satan gets the king. We saw some of the ways Satan got several of the Old Testament kings before we turn to David. Number one, Satan got King Saul by the fear of man. Number two, Satan got King Solomon by the perfectionism that is born of pride. Number three, Satan got King Uzziah by getting him to believe that he was above the rules. Number four, Satan also got Uzziah and King Jeroboam by getting them to indulge their temper just once too often. Then we began what will be our concentrated study of how Satan got King David. We saw that Satan began to set David up to be gotten long before David ever became king. Satan eventually got David, first of all, by letting him hear and believe the songs of adoring cow-eyed women who said he was better than the existing king when he was very young. Let's move on. Satan told his minions, here's another way to get David and set him up while he's very young. Set him up even before he actually becomes king. Number six, get him to become aware of all the talent he has while he is very young. Get him to become aware of all the talent he has while he's very young. David had talents as a shepherd, musician, poet, songwriter, lion killer, bear killer, giant killer, warrior, administrator, and military strategist. David was a very talented man. God smiled upon David, and Paul said later, not have I gotten, but what I received. God smiled upon David while he was very young, and gave David a very high profile. And it was a profile that oozed with talent. David recognized his own talents when he was very young. And he started out giving the credit and the glory for his achievements to God. He said, Goliath, God will take care of you. 1 Samuel 17, 37 and verses 45 through 47. David started out giving all the credit and glory for his abilities and talent to God. However, early awareness of much talent sets a king to be up for the temptation of self-dependence and self-confidence. He who has much talent and knows it is more tempted to depend on talent and self. In Philippians 3:3, the Apostle Paul wrote, "We have no confidence in the flesh." We have no confidence in the flesh. And then Paul goes on to list his credentials, his pedigree, and his talents. And he says, we have no confidence in the flesh. Often it is the talent of the king that gets him in the end. Because of that, he is a merciful, loving God who gives to the Apostle Paul's and the Charles Haddon Spurgeon's thorns in the flesh to allow them to be buffeted. I said God allows it. It's the messenger of Satan, but God permits it, lest the Apostle Paul's and the Charles Haddon Spurgeon should be exalted above measure. So a loving God allows the doubt and the excruciating agony of doubt and the depression that Spurgeon had. And God allows these difficulties to compensate for the temptation to depend on talent. 2 Corinthians 12:7. Oswald Chambers, in Conformed to His Image, said, "The more spiritually real I become, the less am I of any account." That's death to self. The more spiritually real I become, the less am I of any account. I become more and more of the nature of a grain of wheat falling into the earth and dying in order that it may bring forth fruit. If a man, continues Oswald Chambers, if a man attracts by his personality, then his appeal must come along the line of the particular work he wishes to do. I'll repeat that. If a man attracts by his personality, then his appeal must come along the line of the particular work he wishes to do. But, says Chambers, we need to stand identified not with our own personality, but with the personality of the Lord. John the Baptizer said, "He must increase, but I must decrease." That's the subjugation of the preacher or father or leader's own personality and the uplifting of the person of Jesus Christ. To whom are we trying to win our followers? That's the issue. Are we trying to get a following for ourselves? Are we trying to point people to the glories of the Lord Jesus Christ? Now, turn to 1 Samuel 18. 1 Samuel 18. Verse 21. As we continue to consider some of the strategies that Satan laid against David, who would become king. 1 Samuel 18:21. Saul was already jealous of David. And Saul said, 1 Samuel 18:21, "I will give David her. I will give David my daughter Michal, that she may be a snare to him." And turn over to 2 Samuel 6. 2 Samuel 6. Satan worked in the mind of Saul, and Saul said, "I know our daughter. I'll give my rival, our daughter Michal. She'll be a snare to him." 2 Samuel 6:16. We can only read part of the account. I'm assuming some knowledge on your part with respect to this particular account. 6:16 of 2 Samuel. "And as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through a window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord. and she despised him in her heart. Verse 20. Then David returned to bless his household. Here was David in the joy of worship. He was giving God the glory. And he returned expecting to find a welcoming atmosphere in the arms of his wife. He expected to find affirmation at home. He returned to bless his household. Period. Space. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How glorious was the king of Israel today?" That's in the Hebrew. "How glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids of his servants as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovereth himself." David was not totally unclothed. He was not naked. David had simply taken off his royal robes and was appearing in public dressed only in the sleeveless garment of the servant priest. He was attired at this point as he lost himself in the worship of God. He was attired not as the king, but as a servant priest in an ephod. These passages deal with Saul's gift to David. We do not have to read into the passage to conclude that Michal was one of Satan's strategies against David. We are not being uncharitable or speculative because we have the sad testimony of the woman's own father who said, "I will give her to him that she may be a snare to him." I'm not speculating. It's in the context. This gal was bad news. Gentlemen, choose wisely. You're to spend a lifetime. She can greatly impact your life, your ministry, everything that you could do for God. What a sad commentary this is on a woman. And you ladies, you're going to think I'm a chauvinist. You know, I've talked about adoring cow-eyed women. And now I'm talking about this sad commentary on a woman. I'm not a chauvinist. I just know the power you have. I compliment you. I hope you know a compliment when you hear it. This is no chauvinism. You have a strategic role ordained by God. And you can be a blessing or you can be a snare. What a sad commentary on Michal. And that brings us to the seventh strategy in getting the king. Get the king to be a wife like Michal, who will be a snare to him by valuing image and popular opinion. Opinion with the gals next door. Get the king to be by giving him a wife like Michal, who will be a snare by valuing image and popular opinion more than worship. David was engaged in praise, adoration, thanksgiving to God. His wife was more concerned about his image. Ladies, pastors' wives, evangelists' wives, administrators' wives, if you try too hard on your husband's image, you'll spoil him and you'll destroy him. He is unique. Now, if his tie is crooked, help him with that. But don't you overdo it, because you can so program him that you'll just take the breath of God off him, because he'll begin to feel like he needs to be a robot to meet your expectations of image, instead of just going ahead with his own God-ordained ministry. many leaders in both the home and the church have been destroyed by image-addicted, profile-polishing wives. Wives who manipulate and politic to see their husbands rise in the eyes of the world often grease the pole for the fall of their husbands. I'm going to help him be rightly connected. I'm going to help him climb the ladder. And that is often the greasing of the pole for the opposite of the rise, the fall. It's not by might. It's not by power. And it's not by, shall I add, by image, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. Zechariah 4:6. We've got just too much image consciousness. We've had too much image consciousness in the independent Baptist movement. And so you have young men whose mannerisms and gestures are so plastic because they're a carbon copy of their hero in the ministry. Gentlemen, let's be real. Let's be individuals thrown up in burning up for the glory of God, not promoting ourselves or some Baptist king. Image can be paper thin. Image can be so plastic. Image consciousness can quench the Spirit of God. Now, you knew I'd get to it. And I have to. Turn to 2 Samuel 11. 2 Samuel 11. Verse 1. 2 Samuel 11:1. And it came to pass, after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, now go to verse 1g, the final section of verse 1, but David tarried still at Jerusalem. The eighth strategy that Satan often uses to get the king is to get the king to indulge in self-pleasing, self-pampering idleness. Get the king to indulge in self-pleasing, self-pampering idleness. I'm not alone in seeing it this way. I have great respect for the British expositor, F.B. Meyer. And F.B. Meyer says that David's lingering behind in Jerusalem indicates that David was coddling himself in lethargy and laziness, and that David's lack of self-discipline and personal hardness, 2 Timothy 2:3, David's lack of self-discipline and personal hardness at this point had devastating consequences. The little bit of self-indulgence led to major disaster. Self-indulgence in one area often puts a chink in the armor that opens up the way for self-indulgence in other areas. I love to read the Wall Street Journal. It does not publish on Sunday. I force myself to save Saturday's Wall Street Journal till the Lord's Day is all over. The sun has gone down. I'm a little bit Jewish. The sun has gone down. My service to Christ in a public way and the church is over for Shabbat. And then I read the Wall Street Journal. I just discipline myself to leave it there. Just leave it there. All throughout Saturday and all throughout Sunday. Because self-indulgence in one area often puts a chink that opens up the way for self-indulgence in other areas. David's self-indulgence was especially reprehensible Because David chose to pamper himself at a very critical moment in Israel's national security. Now, self-indulgence is always reprehensible, but the point is, it was doubly so because they were facing a battle. And it is reprehensible that this man should have indulged himself at a time when the national security of Israel was at stake. It was so selfish. Notice, again, the second, third, and fourth sections of verse 1. After the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, David sent Joab. David chose to pamper himself after the year was expired. Charles Ryrie, with whom I sometimes agree, tells us that the phrase after the year was expired refers to the return of the year. After the year was expired refers to the return of the year, namely the spring. Dr. Ryrie adds, spring was an advantageous time to wage war because of good weather and available provisions from the harvest. This was an optimum time to lead the troops to battle. It was so optimum that you could count on it. This was the time when kings, usually wise kings, usually started the next campaign. At the very time that was most advantageous for the task to which David had committed himself, David, the leader, opts to stay home and let the second in command, his nephew Joab, shoulder the load. Now that's quite a cop-out. When you let your nephew bear the brunt and become the point man, this speaks of the ninth way Satan gets the king. Satan tells his principalities and powers to get the king to default in what is his responsibility and leave someone else to fill the gap. Satan gets the king to default in what is his responsibility and leave someone else to fill the gap. The enemy is getting the king when the king passes the buck that should stop on his desk. But I'm not trying to make a case for the indispensability of the leader. I am not saying that leaders are indispensable. I am saying when leaders sign up, they know they're signing up for responsibility and they'd better fulfill it. Else they should never sign up in the first place. I'm saying that the leader must keep faith with the cause to which he has committed himself. The integrity of the leader is only maintained as long as the leader faithfully discharges his responsibilities. That goes for ladies, wives, mothers, Sunday school teachers, missionaries as well. The leader who habitually defaults and abdicates responsibility invites disrespect and rebellion. I learned quite directly on one occasion about a pastor who was quite shocked that his deacons asked him to move on. This was out on the West Coast. He was quite shocked that his deacons said, "You're not what we thought. It's time for you to move on." He was quite shocked. But one of his practices was he would disappear for 2 days at a time and never tell anybody where he was. He said, "It's nobody's business but mine." Oh, yes, it is. The ministry, leadership, is a place for accountability. You've got to keep the pulse of your ministry. You've got to be in the loop. You can't be detached because of self-pampering. Have you ever thought how it must have been that day when Joab, the nephew, commanded the Israeli troops to move out? I'm sure that when Joab first gave the command, the members of the army began to look around and look at each other and then look back at Joab as if Joab had made a great oversight. No, Joab hadn't made the oversight. David had made the oversight. And Joab was giving the command, move out! Because that's what David told him to do. And I'm sure that the troops were saying, at least to themselves, surely you don't really mean it. There's something not right here. There's something missing here. Surely you can't really mean that we're supposed to move out right now. Joab, haven't you got eyes? Can't you see that David isn't here? Why are you telling us to move out? You can't mean that we're supposed to move out without our leader. Why, King David is always here. Where is he now? Where is he? Where is he? David? David? We need you. You're always here, out in front, giving leadership. Must be some mistake. But there was no mistake. And imagine the great letdown and disillusionment the troops must have felt in the pit of their stomach when it finally sank in that David wasn't coming this time. He was leaving them to fight the battle without him. Let us state the obvious. King David should have lost this battle against the children of Ammon. He'd lost his integrity. He should have lost. Morally speaking, David deserved to lose this battle. It was only the mercy of God that allowed the Israelites to be victorious. No leader is indispensable. However, as I write, I got it from someone else, as I write in my little book on leadership, there are at least four things that a leader cannot morally or practically delegate. And followers have a right to scratch their heads when they see a leader delegating any one of these four things. The first thing that a leader cannot morally or practically delegate is the responsibility to correct or discipline. A mother can't leave that to the grandmother. A father can't abdicate his responsibility to discipline to his father. And a pastor cannot default in the matter of discipline. Whether it's a staff member, a church member. I remember that some years ago, there was a Baptist hero on the scene, and he used to brag his church was too big to practice church discipline. Well, there was a very, very practical reason for that justification. Wickedness was very close to the throne. You say you're too candid. I'm as candid as I believe we must be when we look at the mess our movement is in. When people fail to connect the dots. When people fail to learn from history. Then we're just going to repeat the same default, the same disillusionment, and the same falling away. And they'll go after the Calvinistic Bible teachers. People have a right to expect integrity in independent Baptist leadership. And we shouldn't be shocked or outraged if they go elsewhere, if they cannot find integrity in independent Baptist leadership. A leader cannot morally or practically delegate the responsibility to correct or discipline. Now, it can be done in love, but it has to be done. Now, have you ever thought about doing it a different way? Use leading questions when you discipline or correct. Unless it's a four-year-old, if it's a four-year-old or an eight-year-old, use the paddle. But if it's a staff member or a church member, use leading questions. Did you happen to see what took place as a consequence of what you did? Do you think it'd be wise for you to do that again? Use leading questions, but correct. Be a leader. Cannot morally or practically delegate a major problem. If there's a problem, don't go fishing. Stay home. Deal with the problem. C, a leader cannot morally or practically delegate tasks that involve confidential information. And D, a leader cannot morally or practically delegate responsibility to create and maintain morale. David behaved irresponsibly in two of these four ways. David delegated a major problem. I would say a war, a battle, is a major problem. David tried to delegate a major problem, and he also delegated the responsibility to create and maintain morale. I repeat, Satan gets the king by enticing the king to behave irresponsibly. I wonder if some of us here this morning have been copping out, passing the buck, behaving irresponsibly, even in things that Satan would try to tell us are little things. I'm hoping, Brother Scoville, that perhaps we could sing 57 in just a moment as we have a time of invitation. Number 57 says, "Search me, O God. Try me, know me. See if there be any wicked way in me." It is wickedness to pamper self. It is wicked to be irresponsible. And you'll lose your ministry because of irresponsibility in what you might think for the moment are little things. Little foxes spoil the vine. I wonder, are there any of us here this morning that need to do some heart searching with respect to our school assignments, our papers, our practical work assignment in the church where we're working, our attitude to the profs, our responsibility in our marital relationship? How are we doing? We're seeing how Satan gets the king, and we will be held accountable for what we're learning. You'll be held accountable. Far better to call yourself on the carpet this morning than to wait till you get the beam.
We trust you have been encouraged or strengthened by the word today. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at graceglory7@juno.com. That's graceglory7@juno.com. We will reply to all those who contact us. And now, until next time, may the good Lord bless and keep you. My soul.